Welcome to MicroCollege. This is Jacob Hunt. I'm the director of Thoreau College in Viroqua, Wisconsin, speaking to you from the mid-February 2026. If you are interested in anything you hear here, check us out on the internet, thoreaucollege.org. Thoreau College is currently accepting applications for our summer field school starting on July 1st and our fall metamorphosis gap semester starting in late August. Today on the podcast, it is my pleasure, long overdue, to welcome two of my most long-term, dearest colleagues, close friends. We've come up in the teaching world together here in Viroqua at the Youth Initiative High School. Today we're welcoming Matt Vaz and Sean Lavoie. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, I'm pleased to be here.
I'm really pleased to be here. This is fun to do this on a Mardi Gras.
Yeah. People who are MicroCollege podcast completists will have listened to the last podcast, which was with two Youth Initiative alums, Esther Kratzer and Livian Rothamet, about what they took from their experience. Youth Initiative High School comes up fairly often in this podcast because it's essential to the story of my life and also of Thoreau College, really the template and exemplar and, a formative thing in my life and a really remarkable school, which is turning 30 years old this year.
It is indeed.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing thing.
Somewhere this year it's going to happen. I think at the beginning of next year.
It's too busy right now.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into all that. But first we want to talk to Matt and Sean. Matt Vaz is the administrator of the Youth Initiative High School, where he's been a teacher, faculty member since 2005. He comes from Morris, Minnesota, out on the plains.
Deep biographical work here.
He's got a bachelor's degree in history from the University of Minnesota at Morris and a master's in agrarian history from Iowa State.
How does he know all this stuff?
It's on the internet.
Is it?
No. Probably not.
I interviewed you when you were hired.
That's true.
I remember all of that.
You can't get anything past Jacob.
You probably do.
And he has been a teacher since 2005, roughly the same time. Matt, Sean, and I all were in our mid-20s, and we're still more or less in the same game, which is kind of remarkable on its own.
It is.
So he, over the years, he has taught history, humanities, auto mechanics. What else do we want to add to that?
Catch.
Oh yeah,
the movement class catch. One of my greatest accomplishments, actually.
He is a teacher who is helping to keep alive the great books, Dante, Moby Dick. What was this year? American Literature.
American Literature was a lot of different books kids could pick, but they had Their Eyes Were Watching God. What did we have? Farewell to Arms. Catch 22.
Classics.
Yes.
Right?
All the greats. Well, not all of them, but 19.
That's
of them.
A lot of books.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, an anchor of the curriculum and the administrator keeps the school running and communicating with the world and with itself. Sean Lavoie is the faculty chair of the Youth Initiative High School. Also started around about 2005. He comes from Massachusetts, and he has a bachelor's degree in anthropology from the University of Chicago, which is where we met up. He, along the way, a few years into his time at Youth Initiative, took a sabbatical and went and got a master's degree from the Harvard Graduate School of Education. Mm-hmm. He is also now a teacher of Waldorf teachers through the Great Lakes Waldorf Institute, working with educators from across the country and sharing some of the interesting perspectives and techniques that have been developed and honed here at the Youth Initiative High School. He first came to Viroqua as part of a circus act.
Sure. That's right.
And probably will leave that way too.
Which is actually part of my wedding. And came to Youth Initiative first as part of the same circus troupe. I'm confident in saying that Youth Initiative has the finest circus program in Western Wisconsin.
Yes.
Take that.
He's also, for a long time, been the the anchor of our Spanish language program, leading trips, including just next week, of students every couple of years down to Guatemala, connecting with partner communities and schools in that area. Also a teacher of humanities classes. And what else am I forgetting about things you taught at the school?
In the beginning, I taught physics with Sparky.
I still
think about that sometimes. the humanities, sciences, yeah. Culture, native cultures, and Latin American culture, things like that.
Yeah. So, very, very honored to have you both here on the podcast. On the MicroCulture podcast, we have a tradition. Every guest gets asked the same question to begin with, which is, where were you 18 to 21 years old? What were the big influences on your life? What do you remember for that period that you've carried with you to today? Matt, you're older. You should go first.
I am the oldest one at the table.
You're.
Yeah, 18.
Are you older than Jacob?
Yeah, nobody knows. Everybody assumes that I'm not because I look at my skin. But
yeah, it's soft.
No,
it's
because
buttery.
Jacob seems a lot and is a lot wiser than I am. But I am, 1 year older than you.
Yeah.
And 3 years older than you. 18 to 21, that would be 1998 to 2000. What were my influences? I think I was just sort of coming into a period of traveling around the country and trying to play out some sort of settlement fantasy. I think I don't know if I had really a lot of, I didn't have any strong day-to-day mentors. I was mostly on my own or in groups of peers. I think artistically or intellectually, I would say, earlier in that 18 to 21 period, it would be something like the beat generation literature, that type of thing. Definitely William Burroughs would have been my, I think I've evolved into more of an Allen Ginsberg fan, but William Burroughs, definitely loved William Burroughs. And getting more into nature and fixing, being able to fix things, being able to be self-reliant. I don't know if I really had any sort of intellectual, I wasn't reading Thoreau, for instance, but I was, going out into the mountains, going out into the world, tinkering with things, not fixing them, probably making them more broken, but like just kind of learning about the physical, just trying to kind of fill out. I'd always known, I was a book person, did well in school, and just trying to fill out that other part of me that I hadn't really paid any attention to or valued up until that point. So, anybody that could do that kind of stuff, I think I was interested in listening to, which there were a few of them at the time.
Yeah. Makes sense that you're into the beats, right? There's a lot of resonance there from, I know, stories that you've told and those interests that you just expressed, right? Out on the road.
Yeah, and this idea of America, and a sort of spiritual patriotism that isn't confined by the actual human beings living here, it was kind of a spirit. I was really into that concept and did a lot of traveling around the country and just soaking it up.
Classic.
Mm-hmm. Great. Pretty cliche. Or classic. That's a nicer word.
That's a nicer word. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're cliches for a reason.
What about you, Sean? What stands out from that period?
Yeah, it was a super, what a potent time of life.
Indeed.
It's a little bit actually hard to, you could go a lot of different directions because it was so layered. What hit me first was this article I read in Harper's Magazine. Which I think I picked up at some library. I didn't get Harper's, and it was when I was in high school, senior year of high school, about these DIY vegans. Ooh. Who lived like in Portland, like in Eugene. I think it was in Eugene,
yes.
Oregon, which was so far away from where I was growing up, in very mainstream kind of working class small town Massachusetts. And but there was just something so like appealing about this. Was also like the battle in Seattle, 1999.
Yeah,
there was. I was I had been really active in my Unitarian kind of youth group and on a national level, and like it kind of just introduced me to all these weirdos. And I had been, you know, good at school. Really, you know, sports was a, you know, like what you did to, and it was an important part of my upbringing. But like, I guess I was kind of just, when I think about between 18 and 21, just kind of embracing some, like some weirdness, some stuff that like my grandmother wouldn't be able to understand. You know, my immigrant grandparents would be like, are you going to make any money? And I'm like, I'm street performing. Grandma, I'm vegan. So I did go vegan.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and in this really, really dramatic, 18 years old was a really dramatic year. My siblings, we had the kind of really a family disruption where we all moved out of my mom and stepfather's house. And all went vegan, all in this one summer.
All the brothers went vegan at once?
The four LaVoy boys. Yeah.
I would have loved to have been there for that.
It was a wild time. We didn't know what the heck to eat.
a lot of TVP.
And so when I went to Chicago, it was so many things felt like possible. You know, all this food that I'd never thought of. You know, living in a city. And so, you know, just I remember that also the first week of college. We did like a service learning, like you could choose what kind of orientation you wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And ours led us to the Sue Duncan Children's Center on the south side of Chicago, right next to Operation Push. Uh-huh. Jesse Jackson just died today, so I used to go see Jesse Jackson. Wow. And, you know, Sue Duncan's son becomes, under Obama, Arnie Duncan, who's the head of... Anyway, it was just like, you know, like I kind of just felt like I was walking into like where things were really going on. You know, my dorm was next door to the Obamas.
Yeah, and this was when Obama was rising to prominence, running for Senate, that kind of stuff.
Well, he was a state senator at that time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, you know, and I marched in a parade next to him, in Bud Billiken Day parade. So I just felt like I was kind of just chucking myself willy-nilly, and I think I had way too much confidence.
No.
As a, you know, part of the delight of my privilege has been just to have to be overconfident. And that has, I think, not hurt so many people, but it has led me into a lot of really interesting situations. So, yeah, at 21, I was, by the end of college, I was living on a bus, you know, and running straight veggie oil and traveling the country with a circus troupe. So it was quite a stretch between, you know, just like school person speaking at the graduation, you know, and head of the National Honor Society to just kind of wave my freak flag.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think, you know, that I had the good fortune of, when we met, you know, it was sort of the end of that period. And, it was, the University of Chicago, City of Chicago. These are like dramatic settings to come of age. Right. I had the good fortune of kind of stepping into some of the circle that you'd built really with the community organizing work and the circus and all that, little picture of that. So
that was pretty awesome.
It was part of my story too. So awesome. Well, so I think we are here on the beginning of the 30th anniversary year of Youth Initiative High School. It is roughly also 20 years since all of us started teaching there.
Yeah.
And I just want to emphasize, I think people here maybe don't realize, you know, think about it enough, but how unusual that is to be a person in any profession, but especially in teaching.
Yeah.
We're company men.
Yeah.
We are. I'm waiting for my gold watch.
you know, it's still 30 years on, a grassroots bootstrap, you know, scrappy organization that is, it doesn't feel like it's 30 years old, I would say. Although, if you know how some things used to work, it is actually more organized.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
A little bit. But just, yeah, and not too organized, I think, is an important part of it, too.
Definitely not too organized.
So I guess this is a question I should ask at the end, but it's on top of my mind. Like, what have you learned about education? Education for adolescents and teenagers in these 20 years.
Oof.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I think maybe I haven't learned anything about education, that I've learned something about this particular place and these particular people. I mean, I think there's, of course, there's a flip side of the coin of being at the same place for 20 years. It's not that I've never gone somewhere else and seen some other things in that 20 years. But I guess one thing I've learned is that, yeah, when you do commit yourself to a place and, you know, a history and that's on a human scale, like, it, you enter into this dialectical relationship where, you know, the subject and the object are just really kind of broken down. I mean, you learn just as much about yourself and your own weaknesses and your own strengths as you would about how to best approach a student. Or, you know, I think that it's hard to even, yeah, you just kind of enter into this really intimate relationship that feels very natural. Education, I think over time, coming out of graduate school, I have learned it's less about, you know, classroom content than it is about character content. Mm-hmm. Certainly, I think, you know, where that stuff, I believe, is important, it's really, yeah, just the superiority of wisdom to knowledge. I think knowledge is a step toward wisdom, but it's not knowledge without wisdom is actually pretty dangerous. And so that's one thing I think I've learned, and how to try to leverage the two of those things for each other's benefit, you know, mm-hmm. in the classroom. Like, what does this knowledge that we're learning tell us about, you know, what the right thing to do is, or how do we use the actual process of learning to make ourselves better human beings? So I think that's probably the biggest thing I've learned is that there's a real distinction between knowledge and wisdom, and that wisdom is superior to knowledge.
Hmm. Yeah, I just I agree with that. I would add that what I was looking for in my own education, I feel, was, I don't know if I could have even named it at that point, but retrospectively, it was community. Mm-hmm. I was looking for a place where people had dug in, mm-hmm. like Matt said, where there were where the relationships were long, and I think, yeah, I think, you know, the word wisdom's a great, like, wisdom is, we think of wisdom being held by, like, sort of holy men on a hill wearing, like, a loincloth alone all day, but, like, wisdom is held in community, you know. And this is a little bit of the the thing that we're recovering in our culture, is understanding how important community and relationships are. And so I guess I, you know, it's funny that I now teach teachers and mm-hmm. have a master's in education, and I feel like I keep coming back to these simple things of, like, you know, like, a plant is only as good as the soil in which it grows. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, the quality of education in a school is only as good as the school community, you mm-hmm. know, like the sort of vitality. So I feel like I've learned a lot actually about community building and kind of what helps a community be strong, the kind of, you know, sort of creative room that Youth Initiative gives to its teachers, and these particular rituals of inviting in people and caring about deep sort of wisdom streams. Hodley keeps us really young in a way, you know, keeps us sort of forever young, because I think we're actually asking really deep questions, and not like, hey, how do we integrate Claude and OpenAI into our, you know, content delivery
and our workflow, our
stack.
Yeah. like those things we're not dwelling on. We're dwelling on, you know, like Matt said, like, how to create ethical people in a vibrant community.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think I wanted to ask you also, you know, as you stepped into this role of, you know, beyond our school community, of teaching teachers, and, you know, presumably bringing a lot of things that you have experienced and learned in this context. So, how do you introduce what Youth Initiative is and what's distinctive about this as a school to those people. How do you explain what Youth Initiative is?
Well, interestingly, no one's ever kind of, you know, I've never done a course on Youth Initiative, but like all my courses have been basically about Youth Initiative. You know, that's, I think that's like, I'm like a one trick pony. Or, you know, that's, it's, this is, like we said, I've been here for 20 years. I've been here since I was, 23, I came here. So I haven't really done anything else.
Yeah, you've been practicing this trick a long time.
It's I'm like, I got it down. So, yeah, I'm not really going to answer your question because so I don't have an answer for it. But, you know, I do think it's really informed me and helped me. I think it helps me meet people who have the wrong question in some way about mm-hmm. education. You know, that no one's ever going to give you, you know, give me the curriculum. What are you teaching this class?
Right.
You know, and of course, sometimes you need that, right? But you really have to, you know, and I think, again, maybe this has just been such a part of my own upbringing and my own development as a person, is that things like biography, things like, you know, investigating your own education, mm-hmm. what worked, what didn't, what do you long for in an education? What do you long for in the world? How can you consider yourself kind of like a collaborator with your students in world creation? Whatever, you know, like mm-hmm. Maybe not phrasing exactly like that, but because that's just been how I've, you know, like I came into education not actually wanting to be a teacher. Like I was interested in there.
That's part of almost like the job description for a Youth Initiative teacher.
It's a little is, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I was interested in making art and also interested in kind of social justice. I'd been doing community organizing mm-hmm. and the school kind of, It felt open to that, you know, like it was like an opening for me to be able to do all those things. Mm-hmm. So, if anything, I guess you know, if what I try to pass on is that fullness, you know, inviting teachers to be their full selves, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. Which is not always easy, yeah. and
maybe almost their full selves. Just leave a little some of it at home.
I leave that to Matt, the administrator, to work on.
Yeah, so I mean,
let's take it down to 85%.
Yeah, so Youth Initiative is a Waldorf inspired, affiliated with the Waldorf movement, but a definitely distinct take on it. And you know, I've done Waldorf teacher training, and you know, most people in the school haven't. But really, Waldorf teacher training often emphasizes this. This is really what's interesting is not the particular like strategies or techniques or in the care. It is the inner development or the continuing like development of the teacher and their engagement with life and themselves. And I think you point to the whole community actually in this way as well as being a key part of the pedagogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've kind of feel like I can continue to get a little bit clearer on this. You know, this summer I'm leaving in class the high school or the upper middle school and high school training that I'm putting out there is education as initiation. Like, let's just throw let's put curriculum on the side and really just think about what is this initiatory process that teens are going through in our world right now. How is it like humans? Since time immemorial, and how is it like? I mean, it's more like that than it is maybe how we think about it in the buzzy sense of things are new and different for teens. So, connecting to some of those wisdom sources about like really let's think about this time of life as an initiatory process mm-hmm. where in school we can help because we don't have religion really anymore. Sorry, churches out there, you know,
yeah,
like
it's that been the, a tough couple of decades,
the school, but... like Matt said, like. Our responsibility as character in character building just it feels really, really, really powerful. And I think we take that really seriously. And I mean, I know a lot of other schools and educators do who see their, you know, like our role is to kind of, create kind of like a crucible, you know, like the, mm-hmm. We have no control how they actually all turn out. I think you got to kind of let go of some control, you know. They come in pretty with a mission, you know.
My mother, who was one of the founders of the school, always used to say about child rearing, they grow up in spite of you.
Yeah. Well, it's a stewardship, you know. I mean, you are not. I mean, you weren't there for the first 14 years. You won't be there for after 18, 19, and. I think obviously we're doing this every day, and so you can start to get twisted around in your head that like everything you do is either going to make or break this kid, and that mm-hmm. is just not true. Mm-hmm. Like you could make the most valiant effort and not, you know, make a dent in a kid's deficiency, or you could do a tiny little thing and it might change. Like it doesn't.
Yep.
It's not a rational. It's not an industrial process. You can't. There's no formulas. There's no. Yeah. It's,
one of the great things of being at 30 or 20 years of experience for us is you people do come back mm-hmm. to visit and 10 years later and say that one thing, right? That's, we probably all have had that experience.
Yeah.
It felt offhand at the moment, but it became very important.
Yeah, as if you could build your curriculum around that, though.
Right.
You
know what
I mean? Yeah, I mean, I've forgotten all my best moments, for sure. In fact, I never even knew they were happening.
Yeah.
But I do think there is something fundamental, though. Like, just, I was talking with someone who leads, wilderness things, has been, you know, in that world, and they were just saying, you know, kind of a common thread of all initiation practices is pain, mm-hmm. you know?
Plenty of that in high school.
And I think, you know... I think we think quite a bit about that at Youth Initiative. Like, what is good pain? Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
What is good discomfort? What is good? You know, you can challenge. You know, but like, let's talk about pain. You know, yeah. Things that are gonna force them to
developmental crisis.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So I think when I think about what makes Youth Initiative distinctive, you know, going back to its origin and to its all the way through its current practice is the unique way that the staff, the adults, and the kids collaborate to really have the school flourish. It's the Youth Initiative because it came out of a collaboration between parents and students back in the 90s. It continues today in various ways with students on committees and boards and fundraising. Matt and his wife Bean, who's another faculty member at the school, go all in. They're living in in the boarding house. We have a boarding house. Maybe you want to talk about that a little bit too. But
a lot of pain there too.
All 24/7. But can you, Matt, as an administrator, right?
Yeah.
Administrators are famously distant from the classroom setting, mm-hmm. and just like to give authoritative statements from on high. Yes. What is it like?
Over the loudspeaker?
My office is actually 4 steps up from the hallway floor. Process, but
can you talk about how that works and what, how are decisions made, and what does a collaboration between the students and the staff look like at Youth Initiative
at the school?
So
you've got an intergenerational collaboration, so you know naturally that the adults in the room are going to have more experience, they're going to have probably more confidence, you know, and that's got to be taken into consideration when to employ that and when to sort of hold that in reserve. So students are, you know, they're active on every governance committee, for instance. Like, if we want to just start from the basic structures, like, they're part of, you know, there's a student, 3 students on the personnel committee and 2 students on the administrative committee, 3 students on the finance committee, and those they're fully part of all of the discussions about who's paying their tuition and who isn't, or how much the tuition should be, or, you know, what problem is this teacher having in the classroom, how can we support them, how can we hold them accountable. So they're there for all that. I mean, they're not, of course, you know, I think they're not expected to and sort of intuit that they're not there to like force the action, but to observe the action, and to, there's this sort of gentle influence that they impress upon the process that is pretty magical. Like, one, they're asking really great, sometimes very basic, but excellent questions that are like, oh, right, that isn't a given. You know, that isn't just something that we should assume. Or, you know, they're there as a sort of, the adults are going to behave better when they're in the room.
That is so important and true.
Yeah.
That's something, yeah.
Like, we are, so in some ways we are, like, living up to them instead of them. You know, I think there is definitely they're looking up to us because, like I said, we have more experience, we have more confidence, we have more education, et cetera, et cetera. But there is definitely something that is, like, still... I don't want to say an innocence because that's kind of infantilizing, but sort of like an innocence that we are still living up to, that like there is a purity out there and we should aim for it. You know, like we shouldn't make, you know, crass comments or convenient decisions. We should make decisions that are rooted in something we can be proud of, you know, and I think that is an effect that it's never really articulated, but it's
that would kill it,
right? Which maybe we should cut that out, actually. But
they won't listen.
No, they won't listen to this podcast. If you're out there, though, if you are listening and you're a Youth Initiative student, thank you. Don't tell anybody. Yeah, but that is like. That is one of the, I think, one of the most valuable things that they offer. It's like you are living up to what you want them to become, mm-hmm. you know? So, yeah, and then, you know, they're just, it is an environment of, it's feels a lot like a daily family reunion in some ways. You know, you've got uncles, the distant uncles and that are there a little bit, and you've got parents that are there every day and people, you know, students and teachers are on a first name basis. It's collaborative. I think one thing maybe that has evolved since I wasn't there at the very beginning, but you know, it's a little more teacher or faculty driven mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, what's on the agenda. But I do think that there's still remains alive, very alive, is this listen to the students, truly hear them, truly allow them to go out there and succeed or fail in what they're doing, and just kind of trusting them, mm-hmm. And knowing that trust will not always be, you know, it won't they won't always meet the expectations. You got to have enough magnanimity to just let them figure it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just wanted to underscore something. Just as an adult in that environment that Matt just described, I notice myself often just hearing what I'm saying, mm-hmm. like in a way that, like, if I was just, I don't know, like a, you know, like these shock jocks who just like blah blah like talk all day, like, you know, like, or just like, you know, there's all this like talking in the world, or you know, texting, and like I am daily, and if not me, not daily, but like at least once a week, like. Fully aware of how I'm saying something, mm-hmm. and because I really, you can see it. I mean, they're, you know, they're teenagers. They're savvy in some ways, but they're also they're kids. You know, mm-hmm. like some part of them is still a kid, and and you say things differently to young people. You know, there's something still clearly formative. You know, formative in formulation. You know. So it's, yeah, it's if you're open to it, it's a really powerful process.
Yeah.
I frequently think about, you know, because we've been doing this for so long, and this has really been, in some ways, like my only real job as an adult. I mean, you know, I've obviously worked in other places as a much younger adult, thinking like, wow, what would it be like to work with just adults? Like most people just work with only people that are adults. And I'm mostly surrounded by teenagers. And I think one thing I always come away with is I think I would be actually much more concerned with power, mm-hmm. you know, and like influence and wanting to sort of impose or control the agenda or what was going on or steer things. And in this way, I do feel like, yeah, you're just called up to a little bit of a higher, ideal. Yeah. Which I really do appreciate.
Yeah. So I think another component of this, I think that's essential to the magic of Youth Initiative, is the freedom that a teacher has to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if Sean, as a faculty chair, if you could talk a little about who teaches at the school. So this is a youth initiative. Is about 80 students these days in grades 9 through 12. They are, is that?
70.
70. Well, yeah. Actually, it's been there.
Round up.
Round up.
70. Nonetheless, a small school in the scale of schools in the world.
For sure.
And it's in a small town. And, you know, many, many of our peer kind of Waldorf and Waldorf-inspired alternative schools out there have struggled just to put together a, you know, a business model to offer a rich curriculum and broad curriculum in the way that, that they aspire to do. And but yeah, the Youth Initiative has all kinds of interesting teachers and all kinds of interesting classes. So who teaches at the school, and how, you know, how are they you know, set up to do their work?
Yeah, thanks for that question. Yeah, it's a pretty cool faculty. I mean, you know, it draws in a lot of inspired people from lots of different realms. And like currently, I'm just thinking about a retired UW physics professor, you know, a Waldorf, we have a new teacher who's a Waldorf grad herself. You know, we've got, yeah, just people from all over. but I guess, yeah, I think kind of the first thing that, I mean, you kind of brought up like how schools struggle to kind of imagine high schools. There's so many fewer Waldorf high schools in the country. And part of it is just something that we do, which is we have a lot of part-time teachers, mm-hmm. you know. So we do have over the years, an increasingly large core faculty, full-time teaching staff. And so that who teach the majority of classes. But I think what's kept the school alive and got it off the ground, of course, was this willingness to juggle a lot of part-time teachers and to be open to people who don't have a teaching background, who don't consider themselves a teacher, but who have something to teach, and then, you know, enough people to kind of hold the vision throughout. I think that is just, you don't see that really many places, mm-hmm. And that gives you a lot of obviously financial flexibility, but also just staffing and keeps your faculty lively, you know. Because it's interesting, there's a core of us it's not just Matt and I who have been around for this long. You know, there's a core of us who have been around for a long time.
10, 12, 15 years.
Yeah.
Probably 5 or 6 of us. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a lot of institutional memory.
And again, I just want to emphasize how rare that is. That's crazy. Like the average teacher has been in their job for like 1 year.
Yeah. I mean, in my 13 years as administrator, which is slightly over half of the time I've been here, I've been through 4 superintendents at Viroqua Public Schools, you know.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, it's. I think one thing that other schools fail to maybe see is like people, you know, they should read Freakonomics. People don't make rational decisions. It's not a rational decision to work at Youth Initiative High School, 100%. Like I have sacrificed so many rational objectives and opportunities to be here, and I'm so happy that I have done it. You know, I think that it making the school a place that is personally, spiritually satisfying for teachers, creatively satisfying, communally satisfying is that's the key to being mm-hmm. able to replenish. You know, it's a place that people are like, wow, this is really fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, meaning. You know, it comes down to meaning. And so what does it mean to have meaning as a teacher?
Yeah.
I just want to hear if we can hear this background noise out there.
No, it'll be fine.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, I can speak to this. I mean, I've in the last few years settled into a groove of teaching one class a year, the 12th grade astronomy main lesson block. And so this is, you know, 12 seniors in their last semester of high school. Supposed to be bad time, right, for to
terrible.
Be a teacher. And it is so fun. And, you know, several groups of students, different kind of mixtures of you know, trajectories and prior history. But you somehow, through the work of the amazing faculty at the school, and I think this environment that Matt is describing for the students of being taken seriously and seeing people to be taking education and character and knowledge seriously, you have a strong majority, you know, really the spirit of the whole class are students who are excited to learn stuff and excited to do whatever, like, projects or assignments you're bringing in. These are students who are going to go out into the world, whether they're going to college, they're going to the workforce, whether they're going to travel the world and you know, write the great American novel. They are interested in the world in a way that's just, it is fun to be in the presence of them, and they eat it up.
So I want to say that, and I think that, again, this is mutually enforcing, right? Like, giving, like, you know, I've been teaching there forever, but I actually have changed the classes I taught almost every single year.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think year over year I've ever had the same teaching load, and I've been able to, with the support of the school, introduce new classes that, you know, maybe not, you know, definitely aren't in sort of the Waldorf curriculum or something, you know, mm-hmm. like they're just a class that I think would be great to teach, and it would be really fun and good for the school. And this happens all the time. So I think that kind of keeping it fresh, keeping everyone, you know, obviously you have to know what you're talking about a little bit, but like keeping people on their learning edge, is really
the teachers, especially,
so healthy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that I think, you know, it's this, when you see adults doing that, oof, man, I'm just thinking, I just have those flashbacks of like certain professors at college who taught the same course for 30 years and like literally the same lecture over and over again, you know, like, and they headed down to a science, but like there's something hollow about it.
Brutal.
You know, they weren't speaking to us right there, you know, and that, so there's not a lot of that going on at Youth Initiative. You know, I think there's some people who have obviously gotten really good at teaching certain things, and it's also really satisfying to kind of, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you know,
teaching, deep in your,
teaching Parsifal for all those years. Like that was a great arc of like, why am I teaching this book? It should be taught. I kind of don't like it. I love it. And then I'm like, I'm beyond loving it. And I can like actually really just teach it. And it's so,
it's important, and I think because the students have this familiar relationship, first name basis, you know, they're participating in hiring decisions. There are students, you know, the students have a comfort with asking, "Why are we doing this? Why are we studying this thing?" And I think to be able to answer that from a genuine place is usually why I prep to any class, right? And both the class as a whole, the subject matter, and a genuine activity. And if you can, you know, live into that and respond to it, then the students are like, oh yeah, they've thought about this. The teacher has a reason for this. That's not, well, it's on the state benchmark, or, you know,
right,
there's some like checklist they're following,
or it's in preparation for something else. I mean, education as preparation is such a such an unconvincing, like, what are we preparing for? Death. That's what we're preparing for. But you can die without an education just really well, but you got to die well. You got to have an education. I mean, what are we?
Or
like,
you person in front of me, you'll be useful someday.
Right.
Right now, you're just, you know what I mean?
A blob.
Like, that is such a terrible thing for people to internalize, right? Because ultimately, you're never going to become useful with that mindset, you know. So I think that's another great thing that, you know, we put people right to work. Like, if you don't, you know, if you don't show up today, like, this room's going to be filthy, and that'll be upsetting tomorrow.
School is not just marking time, you know, until you get to the next thing, right?
It's living in a community where your presence matters.
Totally.
Yeah. That's
like, if you don't show up, actually, there won't be a school. I mean, that is that, you know, obviously we don't put that kind of explicit pressure on students, but I think it's not false. Like, this community doesn't, obviously, its whole reason for being is it's a school. So, but you have to uphold your end of the bargain. Otherwise, all the other people are just going to be like, this isn't worth it. So
real stakes.
Yeah. Real stakes.
Real consequences.
It does feel like an important moment just to give a shout out to someone. You know, I think the three of us were working together for a long time, and then we called in, I think, another really powerful force with Dave Puig, you know, at a time where I feel like the school did need something to make this ideal that we're speaking about right now a little bit more manifest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with we knew there was something about our orientation camping trip, which was...
So, yeah, just set the scene here and explain, why David and the expedition curriculum is coming up now.
Yeah, totally. I'm just talking about, you know, like, how do you make your presence and your activity in a group matter, you know? And, like, I think you can do this in a class and in a school, we needed something to kind of make it, like I said earlier, harder, more challenging, more, like, more removed from like normal mainstream world, And so this expedition where you're out away from everyone else, you're out away from all your comforts, and literally if you don't get that firewood, you're cold. You know, literally if you like take a nap through the mealtime, no one eats. If you don't want to carry your pack, the whole thing, you know, like the it kind of in some ways strips away some of the strips away a lot of things. And I think just gets right to this point of like you if you don't show up, you know, if you don't take a word that obviously Dave loves, ownership of this process, we're all going to feel it really intensely. And I think that's, you know, that's something that we might have been able to articulate and saw some of that before the expedition curriculum really was developed. And I feel like that has done such an important thing for the school to give, you know, now every year, every class has some sort of immersion in that basic aspect of youth initiative. Like this is, you know, basically another way to understand initiative.
Yep.
Anyway, I just wanted to, I think that's a really important piece to speak about, you know.
Yeah. That exhibition curriculum, you know, is it's crucial, you know. Yeah, I think it took the whole thing to a next level. It's something that we've incorporated right into the Thoreau College curriculum as well as essential piece, because it really it's a concentration, a powerful dose of this spirit, and recalls, you know, really requires people to be present. In a way, powerful. Okay, we're coming down to our last few minutes of available studio time here.
Oh no.
I want to ask you a question. So I've had a couple of kids in the school, and I've got an eighth grader who is late with her application.
I was actually thinking, wow, I haven't seen that one yet.
It's coming.
Yeah. It's on its way. I figured as
but
much.
But the question for years, maybe the whole history of the school, has been asked on the application is some form of what is initiative or... And which right there in the name of the school, what do we mean by this word? You talked about initiation, but what's initiative?
I'm eating cornbread right now, so maybe I have to. That's bad time to pick up that cornbread.
I
just watched my 14-year-old son, who's in the same class as your daughter, write this essay right next to me. And that was wild. Like how did he start? You know? Oh, I mean, he was like,
I never did anything. Right?
300 words. Oh my God. You know, like the first two sentences, he checked the word count every 2 minutes. He checked the word count. So the initiative, you know, the initiating part was slow. But then he got momentum, you know, and he started kind of, getting carried away with his own idea. He needed a lot of help at first, just like we batted around conversation, but then he really wrote it. Anyway, you know, I just think the initiative is a process, right? It's a process of acting on the world, and sort of learning who you are through the actions that you have with others. You know, acting on the world is kind of vague, but like the things that you do with others in nature, there's something about being able to reflect on what you've done and said, I did that, you know, like if I hadn't done that, then who would have, you know? I feel like in some ways it's easier to see that initiative from the past, you know, like looking backwards. What did I actually initiate in life? And I think if we actually honestly did that for things that we've done in life, we'll realize there's so many people there who helped us. You know, so I do think there's a little bit of a false that sense of that, like this sort of lone individual initiating things out in the world. But I think there's an important moment where we have to really feel that, like, this is my thing, and if I don't do this now, no one will.
Yeah, well, for one, it's one of the hardest words to type. I mean, so I've been typing
I's
it.
And A's.
I've been typing it for 20 years, and I probably get it wrong half the And I'm a pretty good speller. But that, anyway, so I think for me, you know, it's a lot of weight is put into it. It's in the name of the school. Like, are we living up to that name? And similarly, in those essays, you know, now that it's enrollment season and we're getting those essays, and like, students, they're so often right. I mean, they so often don't say the right thing very well, but they are so, like, at the core. I mean, that's one of the beauties of youth, is that, like, they already know the answer, they just don't know how to say it. Like, most of those initiative essays, what is initiative, 300 words, you know, are so basic. Like, so the things that they point to, because they, you know, their lives are pretty you know, relatively narrow to an adult. Like, they haven't lived a big life. It's always something small, you know, like, I don't know, a lemonade stand, or doing the dishes, or like, and you can kind of get like, oh man, that's okay. But that is actually, they're totally right. Like, it isn't a big thing. It's actually just a thing that wouldn't get done without you. That's it. I mean, it can, like, it's as big and as little as that. And it is doing the dishes, or it is, I mean, people are pretty little, like, in a geological sort of universal time scale, that, like, we can't do that much, but we can do something. And yeah, just do the dishes. Start a lemonade stand. You know, give your sister a hug. But it's huge and little at the same time.
Yeah, I think I've really, you know, once again, appreciated that question and the emphasis on the word, because, yeah, a 14-year-old, you know, they start off, it's like, I don't have anything to talk about at all. And they don't really, as you're saying, these are small things. But the beginning of that, to observe that, you know, before too long, you know, you get, you know, Esther and Livian up there, you know, organizing whole groups of, you know, responses to major world events, right? And you get in the habit of initiating things, right? And I think that, and then you've practiced it very actively through this curriculum in the community in which it's contextualized. Yeah, collecting the firewood, you know, noticing what needs to be done and doing it is something that definitely is clearly cultivated in this process.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think just to, yeah. We tell people what to do all the time at the school.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a lot of, you know, if initiative is like, I did something that, you know, no one had to tell me to do it, which is, I think, a common, you know, basic understanding of, like, I did it without being told. Like, there's so much telling that happens, but it's on this trajectory towards being able to, like, you know, whatever, a protest needs to happen on Lake Street tomorrow, how do we get it done? You know, that, you know, it there's a lot of, like, following people who are attempting to be wise or use wisdom, right? Because ideally, when you're doing those kind of totally out on your own initiative type actions in the world, you're being guided by wisdom. Yeah. You know, the wisdom that you've taken in from your community, from people like Jacob and Matt and Liam.
Yeah,
definitely Liam.
All right, guys, that's that is I think we'll have to cut it there. Yes. I want to thank you so much for coming in. Thank you for your leadership. Thank you for your fidelity to this project and your care of these students, and thank you for being part of this community.
And thank you for starting it.
It's been a pleasure. Yeah.
Thanks for reeling us in.